Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the APAR Industries Limited earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nihar from S. Essential Technologies. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome you to the second quarter FY23 earnings call for APAR Industries Limited. From the management side, we have Mr. Kushal Desai, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Chaitanya Desai, Managing Director, and the CFO, Mr. Ramesh Iyer. I would now pass on the mic to Mr. Kushal Desai.
Thank you, Nihar. Good afternoon, everyone, and I'd like to take this opportunity to wish all of you happy Diwali and good wishes for the rest of the year. Let me start off with an overview of our performance and follow that up with a short industry update. Then we can get into details on the segmental performance of the three major businesses, and post that, we can open up the floor to questions. During Q2 FY23, the consolidated revenue came in at 3,235 crores, up 43% year-on-year. This was largely driven by volume growth. There was a certain amount of increase that happened in commodity prices, especially oil-related products, and a substantial growth in the export business. Export revenues grew by 85% year-on-year, contributing to 47% of the overall company's revenues, compared to 36% a year ago. EBITDA is also up 82% year-on-year to 237 crores at a margin of 7.3%. PAT came in at 103 crores, so that's 80% higher than the previous year. It is at 3.2% versus 2.5% in the year-ago period. So in short, Q2 witnessed a fairly strong performance. And if you look at the H1 revenues and the H1 profit after tax, it's at a historical high. The H1 consolidated revenue came in at 6,328 crores, so that's up 55% year-on-year. Export revenue grew by 65%. And in both cases, this was led by the cables and conductor divisions. The EBITDA for the half-year is up 77% year-on-year. And we could attribute this to premiumization of products and better product mix. Also, a good geographic mix with exports kicking in to a much higher extent and a better client profile. Now, coming to each of the individual divisions, I'll cover first just an industry brief. So in September 2022, actually, power demand grew to about 126.9 billion units. So that's about 11% higher than the period previous year. There is a growth of about 10% in the western region, 3% in the southern region. Residential and industrial consumptions were key factors that spurred this demand growth. The peak demand grew by 11% to approximately 200 gigawatts. Generation increased by 12% year-on-year, while the peak deficit reduced to about 0.5% compared to 0.7% in August. The renewables came in at around 13% of the overall generation. The thermal plant load factors improved by almost 6.3% and came at 60.5%. So we expect over the next few years, India's power sector to be one of the key beneficiaries of a significant amount of CapEx as well as reforms. Whereas electricity has now reached to even the remotest of villages, there is still an issue in terms of the quality of power that is being delivered there. In addition to this, India targets to have 50% of its generation coming from non-conventional energy sources, including solar and wind, by 2030. So this is a delta of merely 37%, because we are at 13% today, with a target of going up to 50%. The outstanding dues of electricity distribution companies towards GenCos remains at over 1 lakh crores, which is still a little bit of a worry. The government has converted the total outstanding dues of DISCOMs towards GenCos into an equated monthly installment plan. The defaulter utilities have been barred for trading at power exchanges under the electricity or late payment surcharge and related matters, which was notified by the ministry in June 2022. This should help improve discipline amongst the distribution utilities. India's power consumption grew 1.64% to 114.64 billion units in October compared to the year ago period. The National Grid Transmission System has added transmission lines of 171,149 circuit kilometers since 2014-15, and a transmission capacity of approximately 604,000 MVA since that period of 2014-15. At present, the installed capacity of the national grid is 404 gigawatts with a peak demand of around 216 gigawatts. Now, coming to the individual business highlights, the conductor business's revenue in Q2 FY23 grew 33% year-on-year to reach 1,439 crores. This had a much better mix in terms of clients as well as significant increase in exports. The export revenue grew by 97% year-on-year, contributing to 46% of the division's overall revenues. The premium products contributed to 44% of that revenue mix. EBITDA per metric ton post forex adjustment came in at 39,108 rupees per ton, which is at a historic high. And as I mentioned, the two main factors is an improved mix of premium products. There was also a lower cost of logistics, steel and aluminum premiums. So some of the hits which we had a year ago period have actually reversed, and that has also helped boost the bottom line. New order inflow came in at 1,468 crores, which is up 67% year on year. If you look at the half year picture for the conductor division, revenues came in at 2,987 crores, so that's up 70% year on year, with higher volumes. The volumes are up 29% year on year, and the EBITDA per metric ton for the half year period came in at 29,786, so that's 87% higher than in the previous year. The total order book is 55%, sorry, the total order book is at 4,065 crores, with 55% of that share coming from premium products. So overall, the conductor division has had an excellent quarter as well as a very good half year. Coming to the oil division, Q2 FY23 revenues came in at 1,176 crores, which is up 31% year on year. This was driven by higher base oil prices. The volumes remain flat compared to the previous period. Export contributed towards 47% of revenues. EBITDA post forex adjustment came in at 4,550 rupees per kl. The lubricant revenue was 207 crores with a volume of 16,595 kl. If you look at the half year FY23, the oil revenue is up 30% year on year at 2,244 crores, but again the volumes remain flat in H1 compared to the previous period. EBITDA per forex is at 7,154 rupees per kl, and this was largely because of a much higher margin in the first quarter. Going into Q3 FY23, we see some major challenges on the inventory cost versus market realizations for this division. The strength of the US dollar versus other currencies has not only affected cost in our case, but also the ability of various customers and countries to be able to import products. We've also seen a demand compression taking place across all segments in the market, not only in India but also globally. And our sense is that the stability in the market will take some time until the fourth quarter of FY23 at the earliest. On the other hand, in second quarter FY23, the cable revenue grew by 79% year-on-year to reach 762 crores, with a significant increase coming in our elastomeric products as well as exports. A strategic focus on exports continues to deliver rich dividends. It contributed towards 50% of the sales in Q2 versus 29% a year ago. The elastomeric cable revenue is up 55% year-on-year. We see robust business in the renewables energy space, the railways, defense, and the trend of all these segments also seems to be in the upward direction in the future. We have two pieces of major equipment getting commissioned in this quarter. We have our fourth electron beam machine, which should get commissioned in Q3. We also have a CCV line which is dedicated to produce higher voltage elastomeric cables, which largely go into windmill installations and some of the higher end oil drilling and mining applications. And this is likely to also be commissioned in Q3. If you take the EBITDA post Forex, it came in at 70 crores, which is about 9.2% of revenues. So that's up 5.1% compared to the same period in the previous year. If you look at the overall first half, cable revenues are up 70% year-on-year at 1,399 crores on the back of increase in the elastomeric and export business. The overall export business contributed towards 47% of sales in H1. The EBITDA post-Forex came in at 8.5% versus 5.1% in the previous period. The business is set to hit a target of approximately 3,000 crores in revenues for the year. So overall, we believe that the current geopolitical and macro environment is providing a better platform for our industry and specifically for a company like APAR. Funds are being infused in infrastructure both in India and overseas. There is a strong push towards renewable energy. Due to these reasons, we are quite optimistic on our business growth over the next few years to come. The main growth drivers will remain a further improvement in premiumization and a product mix, the clients and the geographic mix, with exports playing an increasingly important role as growth in the infrastructure spending globally takes place and the world is adjusting towards the new ESG norms. I would also like to specifically mention that there is both an updated corporate presentation with significantly more detail on the company profile and performance that has already been uploaded on our website, and our second ESG report, which is a fairly intense effort at providing a very comprehensive picture of our ESG status and movement in the company, has also been loaded on our corporate website, and I would encourage and request you all to please go through the thing. I'm sure it will provide insight and status into the company and the direction in which it's headed in the future. So with this, I'd like to come to the end of my comments. Thank you everyone for joining this call. And can we now open up the floor to questions, please?
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. We take the first question from the line of Mr. Maulik Patel from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity. Congratulations on good set of numbers. A few questions. In the past con call, you mentioned that TFO segment, which did a very heavy lifting for overall company in the previous couple of years, will be a muted one. And it seems that it's going to be more like a consolidation phase. And also the margin, which you said that it will come down because there was some abnormal event in the previous quarter. So margin has come down. Is there going to be more pain in margin, or is it like more steady margin where we have reached for the TSO segment?
So actually the real impact of the inventory cost versus, you know, market prices is going to actually hit in Q3.
Okay.
That's why I mentioned in my opening remarks that Q3 is where we will see, you know, a big impact in this. And I had sort of entailed a few of the key reasons for the same, where there has been a demand compression. There's an expectation in the market that, you know, prices are going to fall. And whereas actually that is not happening. So customers have de-inventorized, and in many cases, you know, instead of finalizing longer term contract, you know, even for a month or 3 months, there's a negotiation that's happening almost by every load or a container, you know, or a week for that matter. So the situation is a little bit disturbed. I think it'll play itself out. Also in the short term, when something like this happens and there's panic in the market, contract prices, you know, lag spot prices. Where on spot prices, you know, you end up you know, traders and some of the players who are shorter term in terms of their deliveries, they tend to gain. So there is this one phase of Q3 where, you know, I expect a major drop in the profitability of the oil division. And then as we get into Q4, I think it'll start getting, it'll start stabilizing.
Got it.
The volumes have remained flat also partly because we've chosen it to be that way. Where, you know, you see that profitability is declining and, you know, so you stay away from some of the business which is actually a drag. So I think that my concern would not be on volumes as much as on ensuring that, you know, the margins, the unit margins are restored.
Got it. And for conductor, I think it continues to surprise, though you have given this time a number with adjustment of Forex, the interest component. But still at this 27,000 rupees per ton, even if I adjust the Forex or interest component, isn't it on a higher side? Or, I mean, because you have been historically giving the guiding that it will be in the range of around 17 to 20,000 rupees per ton. But it's a price. So are we moving on a new normal profitability, or is this, again, there are so many moving variables in the business, so for the quarter or two, it's in a good business, revenue mix is in a favor of a high profitability margin product. It is like just a 2-3 quarters of high margin and then it will come down.
So I think the margin profile is gradually on a steady state basis also going up. So, you know, we at once upon a time had 12,500 as a guidance. We lifted it to 17,500. We are now, you know, on a wicket where we can see, you know, 21,000-22,000 rupees per ton, you know, being a long-term sort of profitability that's pretty much in place. There are a few factors that have helped us in this case. One is that, you know, the premium product sales has been actually continuing to grow. And we see that it will further grow in the next 6 months and in the years to come. We've also had quite a lot of export business that has been going out of India. The profitability around that also has been a bit more favorable. We have had three factors which I mentioned in the opening remarks which have they were headwinds for us a year ago. Now they are tailwinds in this period where the premium on aluminum has come down. The logistics costs also have reduced. They're not back to what they were pre-COVID levels, but they have corrected quite substantially from the peak levels that they were at. And also steel prices have corrected downward. And, you know, the steel is remaining at a lower level, you know, as one goes forward. So there have been a few tailwinds, but our expectation is that the conductor business is going to be on a very solid wicket over the next, for the second half as well as for the next year or two to come.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
In fact, a lot of the work which happened in the years pre-COVID are now really starting to pay a dividend.
And also your investment in the value-added products are now reflecting into the margin also, which because you invested a lot in the pre-COVID also, the benefit couldn't get during the COVID time. So that's also going
also
to be
done. I've seen the Americas right across North, South America, where a lot of investment is going in on the infrastructure side. So that's why I think, we expect that demand will continue to remain strong.
On cable side, can you just share one number that how much of the revenue we have from this Anushakti product for the quarter? And what has been the growth in the product compared to the previous quarter or the previous year?
We are running at 100% growth, you know, year on year.
Okay.
And I think that, but you know, the base is lower. That number will continue to grow. We expect to hit our light duty cable revenues this year at between 180 and 200 crores.
Sure. Which was around 123 last year, right?
Last year it was
120.
About 120, but it had quite a lot of solar cables and other things in it. Here the mix has moved also towards the 90 mm, which is the retail packs. Our distribution continues to increase. You know, as our coverage of states increases. And we've also started increasing our advertising presence, you know, state by state, depending on the distribution that has been put in place. So we've already gone on the air. ATL spending has started in Kerala, where we have a good distribution setup. So this is a space where I think, you know, we will grow considerably over the next 24 to 36 months. We'll see big, lot of investment going in and a lot of growth happening.
Okay, and just one balance sheet number. So, out of the total payable what we have at the end of the first of FY23, how much of that is acceptance? So, we have around 4,700 crore was the payable. What? How much is an acceptance out of that?
Interest bearing LC outstanding is about 3,400 crores.
3,400 crore. Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay, right. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Mihir Manohar from Carnelian Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks for giving the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Sir, largely I wanted to understand the profitability on the conductor side. I mean, you know, the profitability has been quite strong. I mean, 32,000 per metric ton. Sir, I just wanted to get, you know, are we changing? We understand that the share of premium products is going up. But just wanted to understand from a business angle, I mean, are we start catering to, you know, how should we consider the normal profitability when the raw material prices would cool off? And is there a permanent nature in change of business? That is what I wanted to understand. And second question was on the, I mean, you know, was on the inventory side, I mean, on the oil and especially the oil division that you mentioned. So just wanted to understand, I mean, what is the inventory that we are carrying currently on the books and what is the difference in the market price versus the carrying cost which is there on the books?
Okay, so to answer the
So on the conductors thing, there are two reasons that is happening from the market point of view. One is that as we talked about, the share of premium products has been going up, and even in this quarter witness a higher premium products as compared to the conventional conductors, which is what leading to higher margins. In addition to that, even within the conventional conductors, the export mix is going up. We have seen that the proportion of exports in the conventional conductors has been much higher in quarter two. These two factors have actually led to an increase in the EBITDA numbers. And in addition to that, as Mr. Kushal Desai was mentioning, we have been getting favorable cost and logistics, steels, as well as low aluminum premium. And a combination of all these things is where we have seen the EBITDA post forex to be about 39,000 per metric ton in quarter two.
If you the second question that you had was on the inventory on the oil side. So there, actually the price is still evolving in the sense that you know, it's right now at a level which is lower than what it should be relative to the cost of the inventory. But you know, there's obviously a conscious action to sort of raise the price level. But if you just go pretty much on a per KL basis, you're looking at around maybe 2,500-3,000 rupees per KL on an average, where you know, the price mismatch is taking place. Our sense is that as you get into the fourth quarter, because keep in mind that diesel or gas oil is still at very good price levels. So refineries will start moving their product mix more towards diesel and reduce base oil productions if base oil remains low. And in that case, what happens is that spot cargoes start disappearing. So people like us who are on contract, we end up actually getting material, and the spot players actually get a bit scarce. So that's why my sense is that in the fourth quarter it will stabilize, and thereafter it will move in the opposite direction if diesel remains you know, strong. And we have every reason to believe that diesel consumption worldwide has remained pretty strong. And with the Russian sanctions getting harsher as you get into 2023, you know, that's the way it probably will be as you get into the next year. So we see this more as a one quarter sort of effect, you know, as opposed to something that will carry forward.
Sure, sure, sure. So the pricing mismatch is to the tune of 2,500 to 3,000.
Yeah, approximately.
Sure, sir. And just lastly, on the conductor side, I mean, sir, you mentioned that the share of premium products is going up. But, you know, last time we were expecting some 17,000 kind of a normal number. I mean, with business profitability improving, how should we see a normalized range scenario? And if you could just throw some light on the applications of this premium conductor which are there. Yeah, just that was the last question. How should we consider normalized profitability for the conductor business?
So, you know, our order book also has been going up. So, if you see this quarter, we 44% of the revenues came from premium products. The order book is 55%. So, it's clearly moving, you know, in a positive direction. The premium products are all high efficiency conductors, HTLS conductors, you know, and we are also doing copper for the railways, OPGW, which is for carrying the base data load across the country, and then we have specialty rods, and then we have the CTC which goes into transformers. So that's the bunch of and we've also launched a new product range, which is, you know, busbars, which are again copper based products, because as we see over the next couple of years the railway demand coming off, then CTC and busbars, which are also copper products, should start picking up. So if you look at a longer term, you know, we believe that now the sustainable EBITDA can be at least in that 21 to 22,000 rupees per metric ton range. You may have shorter periods where, you know, it'll be higher where there are tailwinds, but if you take a longer period of time going forward, we expect you know, that we should be able to hit those numbers.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. That's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Nimish Shah from MK Investments Manager Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a great set of numbers. So I also had a question on our order book on the conductor side. If you could just help us understand like you mentioned, the 55% of the order book now is premium products. So what geographies, or if you could just help us, is it largely export led or domestic led? What will be the breakup on that front, and which geography specifically you are seeing the demand coming from?
Yeah, it is primarily domestic market, and
Also, there is some component of export, and the export is spread out to various countries.
But concentration is in the Americas, yeah.
North, south.
You're talking about for exports.
Export.
The premium products, as Chaitanya mentioned, are mostly domestic. It's in South Asia. So India, Bangladesh, in South Asia. The export is concentrated in the Americas, as I mentioned earlier.
Okay, and just to understand a bit further, so these order books, is it largely new capex driven, or is it, what are the type of orders like? Is it new investments in the infrastructure side, or is it replacement of conductors? They could just help us understand that.
The export part is largely new lines, so it's infrastructure driven. And the domestic part is a mix of both, the new infrastructure spend as well as some component of the replacement.
Okay, understood. And just one data point, if you could just share the debt figures for the quarter.
Yeah. So long-term debt is about 184 crore. Short-term current portion is about 150 odd crores. And we have cash in hand about 330 crores.
Okay. Yeah, I'll join back in. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Rajesh Kothari from Alpha Accurate Advisors. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, thanks for providing an opportunity. Congrats for a good set of numbers. So just trying to get a little bit further into the previous participant question. What are the basically, if you can give a little bit more insights into how sustainable this new order inflow, how do you see that? Is there any way to track that? And how basically from the competitive landscape, what are the competition when we do exports, how it gets driven? Do they have tariffs on the imports from other countries compared to India? If yes, what are the tariffs? Some little bit more detail on that would be useful.
Yeah, so competitive intensity, I mentioned about this geopolitical consideration. So in many of these countries, there is a clear move to look at suppliers ex-China. And so that is helping. The sustainability of the infrastructure spend looks quite solid. The US has just passed a major set of bills around infrastructure. And all countries, including India, have all made certain commitments in COP26 in terms of, taking forward renewable energy and reducing the carbon footprint. So our expectation is that demand will remain strong over the next several years as this, unfolds.
Right.
So we don't see this as a short term phenomena. In some segments like OPGW, as data is a new oil, there's more and more, every new line that's coming up, the earth wire is actually now an OPGW with a fiber core. So, and that's the backbone of carrying data. As you move towards 5G, you require more OPGW lines because of the quality and the quantity of data both that need to be fed.
I see. So on Chinese product currently, do they have any import tariffs?
Yes, they have the tariffs in the United States are at 35%.
Okay. And there
are many countries where the tariffs for Chinese products have not changed, but the buyer doesn't want to have all their eggs in the Chinese basket or doesn't want to buy products from Chinese players.
So if you basically put your industry, the segment in which you are present, any basically statistics where how much basically is the China exports to the world and what is India's share? What is China's share? The top five companies from China.
There is no published report that
But this basically category, I'm sure, because US published the monthly data of their imports. this category must be coming under them, right? So from there,
But it's not at a granular level where you can then very broad category. So for example, the US imports $20 billion worth of cables a year. Okay. It just gives you an idea in terms of the category of cables, but there is no breakup available of which country and which type of cable as far as we know. It's mostly data that has been picked up from being in touch with EPC players, with infrastructure investors, etc.
Understood. And just last question from my side. Since the raw material headwinds as well as tailwinds do impact your business, do you enter into long-term contracts, or it is like a spot? As soon as you get the order, you lock the required raw material. How it works?
So the both the cable and the conductor side, as far as metals is concerned, we run a completely hedged book, where moment an order comes, the metal is immediately booked, so that there is no speculation on the metal. There are certain commodities where, like steel and polymers, etc., where there is no hedgeable situation. So we typically don't price for very long period, wherever there is no hedging. In terms of the oil business, we have 75% of our purchase that is under long-term contracts.
Understood. So basically, therefore, these tailwinds, what you talked about, particularly premium on aluminium and steel price correction, do you think this tailwind can also further add from here on to your EBITDA per ton?
So these are not hedgeable. So you have an NJP and, a premium which is over and above LME, and that captures logistics cost and warehousing cost. And since both of them are sort of declining, the overall premium has also come down. So it's not something that can recur. It had gone up to a certain level. Now it's come down to a more manageable level. The same thing with logistics. There are certain DDP contracts were in place. So we saw the other side of the problem when suddenly the freight rates went up. Now when the freight rates have come down, we are seeing some benefit which is coming on account of that.
Understood.
But when you remove all of these factors and on a steady state basis you go, we feel that we can be at that 21,000 to 22,000 per metric ton EBITDA on the conductor business with the product mix that we are looking at today.
You mean EBDTA, which is right now 20,000. You are talking about that, am I right?
No, EBITDA, EBITDA.
Which is roughly 39,000.
For the first half has been at 29,000.
Okay, so you are saying that 21,000, 22,000. Okay.
Yeah.
So why the decline you are saying?
Because we just explained to you that there are certain factors which have been tailwinds that have added to this. So the little bit of fluctuation will always happen. The longer term situation, when you look at it over a year, 4 quarters, 6 quarters, that's the steady state that we can expect.
Understood. Great, sir. Thank you, sir. Wish you all the best.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Vignesh Iyer from Sequent Investments. Please go ahead, sir.
Congratulations, sir, on a good set of numbers. I just wanted to know, we have done around, in conductors division, we have done around 66,000 volume, as in 66,000 metric tons for the first half. Can we expect still to do around like 1.3 lakh, 1.4 lakh tons for the entire year?
Yeah, the target is to do about 140,000 tons. So,
okay, so we are
second half, volume will be higher than in the first half.
Okay, so we are still on track as we had thought about it in the first quarter one, right? We are on line with
140,000 tons for the year. So 66,000 tons is what we've done in the first half. So the second half we expect to do closer to 75,000 tons.
Okay. As one of the gentlemen asked you a question,
one of the things that may happen is that you may have in some cases the volume going up, the EBITDA per ton may be a bit lower, but that's the reason why the steady state 21,000. Because a little bit of it moves up and down with the mix of the product also.
So looking at, we have about 75,000 tons which we expect to execute in the second half of the year.
Okay. But as I said, like two points on the EBITDA side of the conductor division. It is like firstly, if I'm not wrong, the currently quarter two, the premium mix is around 44%, and your order book premium mix is around 55%. And we have got, so I expect that the 75,000 tons that will get executed might have a more of a premium share of the product, right? So can we see that additional EBITDA per ton kicking in?
Yes, so as we explained, there's a multiple reason that accounted for this Q2 EBITDA, and we saw this premium share going up. Secondly, you see that even within the conventional thing, the export mix is going up. And as I was explaining, this is logistics, steel cost, premium cost.
Production. No, adjusted for the aluminium and logistic part, keeping that aside, can we see that a bit of upside because of the premium mix? Solely because of premium mix.
Yeah, so if the everything continues, we see a similar kind of momentum that we saw in H1. But it will also depend on the macro environment and how the external costs are there. Also, as you see, the interest costs are likely to go up. So if the interest cost goes up, it will also have an impact on the EBITDA numbers and the EBITDA numbers.
Okay.
So, because these businesses, see, what we need to understand is that there are two layers that are there ahead of us who actually call the shots. One is the developer of the ultimate infrastructure. The second one is a set of EPC players that are involved, you know, in terms of actually putting up lines and building this infrastructure. So all of these things don't sit in our hands, you know. So there are some movements that happen back and forth. But what we can explain here is that, you know, as the premium products keep increasing, the baseline of your EBITDA will also keep on moving up. So as we were computing at 17,500, we are now almost 3,000 to 4,000 rupees a ton higher, you know, on a steady state basis, given the mix that's in place. So you will always find some positive noise. There could be some quarters where there's negative noise, but the median line will keep rising as the premium product category grows. So that's the point which I just wanted to make, you know.
Right. So, on the cable generation side, sir, are we now seeing a new, you have more or less revised your target? If I'm not wrong, you had given a target of around 2600 crore sales for the entire year. But in the management commentary right now, you gave it could be even around 3000 crores. So, keeping that in mind, can we say that we may end up clocking around 750 to 800 crores every quarter?
Absolutely. Our expectation is to do 3,000 crores, you know, for the full year. So it will be a little over 1,500 crores in the second half.
Okay.
And we have order books and things, you know, to kind of support. Or visibility, right. I'd say. Not all of it is order books, but visibility to support.
Right. So our cable division is quite big, and you know, a lot of products involved and we are catering to different division as well. Do you think is it the right time where we start giving the mix of business under cable as to what comes from electromagnetic, what caters to the, specifically to the defense, or what comes from the export of for renewable or etc. Because we are looking at the division which is growing quite fast, so it would give us a better idea as to which part of the business is expanding and how much.
So one thing that we do need to be cognizant of is that a lot of cable business in the B2B space undergoes competitive bidding or negotiation, and there's only a certain level of granularity which we would like to have, you know, in the public domain, because buyers use that information also. They probably go through reports more carefully than any analyst does before they negotiate. So you know, there's only a certain amount, you know, beyond that we draw a line, you know. We don't have a plan of actually crossing it right now, But the point here is that, again, if you look at the mix of product which the cable division is doing, we are investing more and more on that elastomeric renewable energy side. We put a fourth beam in place. It goes towards Anushakti wires, it goes towards solar cables, etc. We put the CCB line in place, which is going to be dedicated largely towards windmills and the cabling that goes into windmills. So that whole segment is, you know, is going to grow. The windmill side, with this new addition coming in, also enables us to go and start exporting the product. So all the major windmill players in the world are pretty much present in India. And we've established, you know, we have over 70% market share in the Indian market on windmills. And with this investment going in, we've got global approvals from many of these players, which I had mentioned in a call maybe 6 months ago. And so that will also start playing out. So that segment will definitely grow, the whole elastomeric side. Also, the Anushakti wire business will grow as we roll out, you know, the wire and cable through our distribution setup.
Right. Just one final question on my side. I just want to know, so considering this windmill cable export, I just want to know which part of the world you're getting more traction from, like from Europe or US as such. If you could just give us an idea.
So we haven't started exporting yet in a big way. Currently, whatever exports have been going out, they've been going both to Europe and the US. It depends, because there are certain players who are much stronger in the Americas, which is General Electric, Nordex, etc. There are other players like Siemens, Gamesa, and etc. who are stronger in Europe.
Right.
We expect that it should end up going to both places. You know, when you start something new, as in the export, going out, it's not easy to sort of predict the trajectory. But our sense is that business will start going to all these major players who are also present in the Indian market.
Actually, my question was more from the side of who is showing interest, you know, at least the preliminary talks at the rate, because Europe is sort of facing crisis because of the conventional way of energy, right? So they might be more reluctant, more interested actually to shift to the non-conventional.
So you're absolutely right there is definitely a crisis in Europe, both in availability of power as well as manpower. Both the powers are an issue at this stage. So we've got approvals from the two largest, which is Vestas and Siemens Gamesa in Europe. And then we also have approvals in place from Nordex and General Electric. GE is the largest now windmill producer in the world. So we have approvals from all of these four players and a few other smaller ones. So our sense is that, you know, this line is getting commissioned in this quarter. So in FY24, you will start seeing volumes going out to these players. And in the northern hemisphere, there is a lot of wind capacity coming in, just given that they have lesser number of sunshine days.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I'll join back in a queue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Sajan Shah from Congruence Advisors. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello. My first question would be, as we have talked in the previous quarter, that we have been defense, we are focusing 80-100 crores of the revenue. So currently, are we trajectorying any better revenue conversation from defense? And could you just give us the split between the railways division, how much order is being from railways, specifically mixing of conductors and cables, if you can give the split.
So, you know, we don't want to get into too much of detail in terms of each of the sub-segments, but on the two are going in different trajectories. The cable side is going into locomotives as well as coaches, you know, and this whole Vande Bharat, you will see increasing requirements happening on the cable side. We have two channels. One is direct supply to the coach factories. The other one is through the harness manufacturers, of which one we are also a harness manufacturer, but there are like 20 odd. So the volume is growing there as the locomotives and coaches are being added. On the other hand, if you see the conductor side, there the railway electrification project is has progressed now at a fairly advanced stage of its completion. And so we will see over the next year and a half or so, the volume starting to fall off. Unless they start upgrading some of the electric lines to higher speed lines. So, you know, that part of the program is being talked about, but the exact details and numbers still need to come out. So there you will have to upgrade the lines to copper alloys as opposed to copper.
Okay, and so the for the defense, we are eyeing any specific better contribution from 1800 crores?
So we are right now at that level of about 80 odd crores. We've been continuing to bid. They are looking at higher and higher indigenous content. So our expectation is that over the next few years, that volume also will grow. But
yeah,
even the defense business can be a little lumpy in the sense that, you know, once a ship is done, then in the last trimester of the ship's delivery, the cabling work starts. So, and most of it is going into the Indian Navy because that's where, you know, it's very instrument heavy and the sizes are quite large.
Right, right.
My expectation is it will grow. I don't know to what extent it will grow from, you know, the current level, but it's in that positive direction.
Okay, got it, sir. My second question would be on the cable EBITDA margin. On our trajectory side, we have said that we would be around 8 to 9%, and currently we are at 9%. So are we seeing a better improvement going forward for the EBITDA margin in cable side because there is a strong demand in the specific in the industry as a consumption in household and all that?
So, you know, the stronger demand is there for these specialty cables, and there is a good demand which is there. I say that there is premiumization happening in the house wires and building wires, where because of the GST impact and various other things, branded goods are selling more as opposed to, you know, lesser players who don't carry brands. The overall volumes are not growing at some, you know, very, very high level yet. So there is an overcapacity in the general power cable side. The results which APAR has shown has fundamentally come on the power cable side from focusing on exports. The domestic market still remains very competitive on the standard power cables. Now, having said that, if you ask specifically what our guidance is on the margin, so we are at about 8.5% for the first half. We expect to do the full year at about between 9 and 9.5%.
Okay. And sir, we have initiated the B2C lubricant which we wanted to get into that space. So what are the like current situation and how you are eyeing for that thing specifically? Retail part, B2C part of the oil and lubricants.
So the oil and lubricants, the B2C part is actually reasonably established. Because it's been around for over a decade. So we continue to, to grow by introducing new products and winning new distribution, but it's a steady growth. There's no meteoric growth that you will see on that front. On the other hand, the B2C growth in the wire and cable side will be at a much, much higher pace, and the total rupees that will be involved also will be much, much higher than in the oil lubricant because the addressable market is much larger. So if you see the total cable market of around 60,000 crores, 50% of it is coming from your light-duty cables and building wires. So it's a 30,000 crore, market which is out there. So we have, as I mentioned, we will be about 180 to 200 crores in that LDC this year. The last year was about 120 crores.
Right.
We should have a similar sort of growth percentage.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, please limit your question to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we would request you to rejoin the question queue. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Amit Anwani from Prabhudas Lilladhar. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. My question is, sir, with respect to, you know, the recent parliamentary committee which announced that there are plans of, you know, setting up renewable energy zones for 66 gigawatt and I think additional 185 gigawatt by 2030. So any thoughts, what kind of market it can create for us? What kind of products, any assessment if you would have done?
So, you know, fundamentally the products of ours which go into this is, you know, when solar grows, then there are two sets of cables which go in. One is for the solar panel wire and the other one is from, you know, the electric panels into the network. Sorry, excuse me. So it linearly will grow with the addition of, you know, the solar capacity. Similarly, in the case of windmills, you have a certain amount of cabling that goes inside the windmill. So that also is linear to the kind of windmills that are getting executed. And then you have evacuation from the windmill installation into the grid. So in both cases, the grid portion will determine or will be conductor demand will come up, you know, for that. So I'm not sure whether we will be able to meet that target by 2030 because we are at 13%, and to go to 50% on an increased base in a span of you know, 17 years is a huge ask. So I'm not sure in what time frame it will get executed, but one thing is I can guarantee is that the demand for our products will remain for quite a while to come. And this is just in India. It's also happening all over globally, all over the world.
Right.
And that is one of the primary reasons that I mentioned also in my closing paragraph that we expect demand to continue for a while, because as countries try to meet their COP26 and now COP27 is coming up. You know, there are new commitments and increased commitments which are coming in from the various national leaders around the world. And as that gets executed, I think our infrastructure is in a pretty good position.
Right, sir. So my next question is on the cables business where you mentioned I think we are on the verge of achieving 3,000 crores. Any outlook you would like to give for FY24-25 on the cables business and how the margin trajectory will look like?
Yes, so as we explained that this year, FY23, we're likely to cross about 3,000 crores. And given that the developments happening on the overseas global front as well as in India, we expect about 20-25% growth happening on an annual basis.
Okay. My last question on the conductor side, just for my understanding, if you could just explain how big is the conductor market globally in value terms in India?
The global market share for the conductor is about 1.5 million metric ton.
India?
Globally.
Okay. India, sir?
150,000 ton. About 150,000 ton.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Prateek Shah from Equitas. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity. Just two questions. You know, how do we see this new line that we are commissioning in Q3? What would be the ramp-up plan for this year, and what kind of ramp-up can we expect for the full of next year?
So our sense is that actually the line should get loaded within a span of, you know, 12 to 18 months. And if, you know, if the initial
shipments to some of the customers, especially in Europe, go through well, then it could even get accelerated sooner than that, because there is a serious, at least at the moment, an energy as well as a manpower crisis in Europe. So I can only tell you that that line is coming in at the right time. And, you know, if the initial product that goes off the line is well accepted, then its ramp-up can be pretty fast. But otherwise, our plan was to get it fully loaded in a 12-month to 18-month time frame.
Okay. And what would be the full revenue potential of both these lines put together at current price?
Around 250 crores, approximately.
Okay. So, and when we say that we improve our guidance for cable division to 3,000 crores, there isn't much contribution that we're expecting from this line right now, right? Because
once again, you know, that 250 crores is from just from the CCV line. The e-beam, the fourth e-beam, then, you know, there's a whole mix of products that will run through the e-beam, including solar, you know, through including solar cables.
Right. Okay, but so this year there wouldn't be very substantial contribution from these lines, right?
Yeah, you have some contribution coming in Q4, but it'll be quite small compared to the total 3,000 crores.
So we have baked in those numbers also in this total of 3,000 crores and the next year numbers that I just mentioned about.
Okay. At my second question is on interest cost. So I understand that we started factoring in our product pricing and our EBITDA numbers reflect that. But still, just if I were to look at you know, our interest cost, if you could elaborate a bit on the forex fluctuations and interest costs going ahead.
So as you see, the SOFR has been increasing on a steady basis, and also forex has been almost increasing continuously. So these two will have an impact going forward. The current quarter still does not factor the full impact of this increase, especially from a SOFR rate point of view, because we have LCs that keeps on building over a month-on-month basis. But yes, this is one area that we'll see an increase. Fortunately, the commodity costs are on a lower side, especially the aluminum and copper. That is helping us to reduce the impact of the increase in SOFR and foreign exchange rates. But
the working capital requirement is expected to remain low?
With the high, it depends on the commodity prices. On aluminum and copper, since the rates are much lower, the requirement will be less. On oil front, it will be higher.
The volume is much higher.
But yes, if the volumes, as you see, are going higher, the overall impact will be higher. So it's a actually mixed bucket of many factors that will determine whether it will be, how significant each proportion would account for. So you see interest rate going up, forex going up, that will be requiring more working capital. If your volumes are going up, it will be high. But if the commodity prices come down, then to that extent it will be lower.
Okay. And if you could just tell me, in the conductor division, the order book, how much would be export contribution from export and contribution from HEC conductor?
Export. Yes, hold on. Export would be about 50% of the total pending order book.
Okay. And HEC?
It's around 35%.
Yeah, about 35%.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Vikram Sharma from Niveshaay. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello. Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, what is overall renewable energy contribution in overall business of the company?
So we have put this as part of our slide in the corporate presentation. It's about 4 to 5% for the company as a whole.
Okay. And sir, one, you mentioned about the bus bar product. So what is it and what is opportunity size in this product?
So actually, bus bars go into a whole lot of electrical installation. So the market size is fairly large, runs into several thousands of crores. So there are a number of players, you know, in this. It's a product which can go
complementary with some of the cables that we have, as well as, you know, some of the other products which we are going to sell.
Okay.
And it's fundamentally, as a railway business comes off, some of the infrastructure with some minimal investment is being redirected towards this product.
Okay.
It will not be a flagship product like how you would have HTLS and how you know, you're getting OPGW and things. But this is a good addition to the basket.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Pavan Nahar, individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Once again, congratulations. I want to, you know, for simplification's sake, I want to focus on EBITDA after the interest, right? Last time we had discussed that that is the better way to communicate. And before I get there, we've done 55 rupees EPS in the first half. There are positives for two segments. One segment will have impact basis the inventory effect, which I would imagine is not generally more than 1 month. Am I right?
No, I think it'll affect the quarter. You know,
sure.
So you'll have an overall effect in the quarter. Yeah.
Sure. So, Kushal, my simple question first to start with is H1, 55 rupees EPS. H2, can it be similar, higher, lower? As things stand today, and of course, things can change.
It should be in the similar range. It could be a little bit lower depending on, what the impact is on the oil side. But on the cable and conductor side, it will actually be a bit higher. So it's a question of, you know, how much the other two will be able to offset whatever this Q3 problem we have. But if you look at it broadly, it should be in the same range.
Okay. And the oil thing actually could even end up in a gain, because it's only the inventory, right? And who knows? Who knows? We leave it at that. I mean, for now, we leave it at that.
The Q3 is quite clear that, you know, there is a challenge. But then, as we've seen, you know, after going through a difficult period, sometimes the rebounds are, they surprise on the positive side.
Correct.
So keeping my fingers crossed for Q4 and, you know, into FY24.
Okay, so we'll stay with broadly 55 again for the second half, right? And, okay, the next question was on the EBITDA after interest. So should I call it EBIT as a better metric to look ahead, because it simplifies a lot of things for outsiders like us?
Yeah, and that's the reason we started reporting that from this quarter onwards. Call it EBIT.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was hoping you all would guide the conversation into that, but never mind. So what I want to ask is, what would be, let's say, in the conductor business, we've done 20,000 rupees as the EBIT number, 20,240 or something, for the EBIT, right? What would be our guidance for the full year in terms of EBIT?
So we've just mentioned our guidance on EBITDA, that's EBITDA, to be about 22,000 per metric ton. Now, depending on how the external environment pans out, if this kind of EBITDA will achieve, our EBDT would be in the range of 7,000 to 8,000 per metric ton.
7,000 to 8,000.
Higher interest cost would be there. So EBDTA would be 7,000 to 8,000.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah. So it will be a reduction of 7,000 to 8,000 per metric ton from the EBITDA.
So 22 will become 14,000.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And then what about the, you know, for the cables business, we've done about EBIT of 7%. You know what we've given?
Yeah, the cable business, we are telling a guidance of about 9%. The EBDTA would be in the range of 6.5% to 7%.
Right, 7% is what it is in the first half. So can we then assume similar in the second half?
Yeah.
Okay. And the third is on the oil business. Here we've done, I want to ask both the volume number and the EBIT number. So we've done about, EBIT number is about 6,000 round figure for the first half. Yes, it is lower in the second quarter. For the full year, what kind of a number we should expect?
So, you know, the first half, Pawan has been 7,150.
That is
exact. So the EBDTA is around 6,000, you said. Yeah, 5,980.
Yeah.
It's a little, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess in the, you know, because I don't know how bad this Q3 is going to be. Q4 will go back to a EBITDA closer to 5,500, you know, kind of level. And you know, the gap between the two is in the range of about 1,500 odd rupees, so that will remain. Between the, okay, the interest component will be around that much, 1,500 odd per KF.
Okay, and how much inventory do we have right now where, you know, you think will impact the Q3 number? How many months generally? Sorry.
It's about 2 months of carry. So you see, what happens is that, you know, we follow SAP where it's weighted average cost. So there is that hysteresis effect, you know, where it drags on a little bit because every parcel that comes in averages down the cost. So fundamentally, it'll hit this Q3. As you get into Q4, I think it should have got itself levelized because most of this would have got sold out.
Okay, so let's leave Q3. Let's leave, you know, what is the new number we should assume for EBIT? Right, 6,000 is first half. Not, I'm not saying, you know, FY23. Generally speaking, what is the number to assume for EBIT in the oil business?
So that only is something that I'm not ready to commit because I don't know what the situation is. You know, when you go into a war, you don't know how much you're going to lose. So this quarter is the one where there is a hangover. There's irrational behavior coming from players. It's difficult to tell. But if you take the overall for the company as a whole, you know, that guidance is pretty much in place, which would be that, you know, the second half would be something relatively close to the first half, including the issue that you will see on the in the oil business in the Q3.
So, Kushal bhai, I'm not asking oil, understood, oil business, I'm not asking you for FY23. What I'm asking is, let's say FY24, once this, you know, oil price is normalized, whatever happens, what should be the normal EBIT number to take? Earlier, we used to guide 6,000 as EBITDA, and you are saying 1,500 as the oil cost, interest cost.
Yeah, so we were guiding 5,500, right? And the interest right now is at close to around 1,500, but with the increase in the SOFOR and, you know, some of these rates, if that's not passed on, another maybe 200 odd rupees is something that one could look at.
So, about, let's say, 4,000 rupees is possible as a EBIT number.
Yes.
Not for this year, when things normalize, not for this
year. Exactly.
Okay, got it. And what about volumes for this year in the oil business? We've done 230K round figure. Can we assume 460K for the full year? Or
yeah, it'll be in that range, yes.
So basically, to conclude, we are on track with our ROE number of 18 to 20%. Probably even higher.
Yeah, that's our ambition, but we need to work out the math to see how that
works. Yeah, but it's fundamentally moving in that direction.
Yeah, because 55 first half, 55 second half, 110, it is more than 20% or close to 20%.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Pawan.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for patiently hearing us through the opening remarks and the Q&A on this earnings call. And just in terms of closing remarks, you know, even though we see a short-term issue in our oil business, overall, you know, we are quite optimistic in terms of the way business will unfold, not only in the second half, but also in FY24 and some of the years to come. The fundamental drivers to the business remain intact and are actually accelerating, which is i.e. the infrastructure that's going into the electrical space. So with that, I'd like to close the call and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. On behalf of APAR Industries Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.